Okay, and just wave at me, I'll come.
Good morning, everybody. I guess is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Good morning. We're going to start this committee meeting now, and we appreciate everybody being here. And with that said, we're going to open up this informational meeting. And
Open up the house.
And
I'm opening the Senate Committee on Redistricting for today, February 11, 2011. Good morning, and good afternoon to Dr. McDonald, who's on the phone in the East Coast.
Great. Thank you. Well, Dr. McDonald, thanks for being here, and we're just going to dive right into this, and I understand that you have all your controls there, and we'll turn the time over to you.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to your respective committees. What I'm going to do today is give you a presentation that I have given previously to the National Conference of State Legislatures, and that's a short presentation. I'll wind that up, and then if there are any questions at that point, we can have a discussion about that. And then I plan to show you some software that we've developed that is designed to provide greater public participation and transparency in redistricting.
This is Senator Bonamici. I just wanted to ask you, would you rather wait till the end of your presentation for questions, or would you prefer that the committee members ask you questions as we go through the presentation? What's your preference?
I thought I'd just stop midway so that if there were questions at that point, I could address them before I moved on. So
So, as
I think you already know, I'm an associate professor at George Mason University, a non-resident senior fellow at Brookings, and I've been involved in redistricting in now seven states, officially and unofficially. I've been talking with people, members of state governments and advocates on the outside about redistricting in many states across the country. So I've got a lot of experience with redistricting. I've been doing this since the late 1980s in California, and have worked across the country. So what I'm going to present first is this presentation I've made at the National Conference of State Legislatures. It's on redistricting practices with regards to transparency and public participation. The source of the information for the presentation comes from two sources. One's a 1990 NCSL survey that they conducted after redistricting in the 1990s. And the second is a survey that myself and my colleagues, Michael Altman and Karen McDonald, performed following the 2000 redistricting. We published this in the source that you see there. Just diving into it, what we did was we asked a number of questions about the way in which people made available participation and transparency in their redistricting processes. And so in the 1990s, there were 37 states that held public hearings, and that increased to 2,000 to 42. And some of the questions that we identified with regards to the public hearings, some of the feedback that we heard from the various states that gave us an idea of the different sort of quality and scope of the hearings that were held, are these three bullet points here. So those questions that came up were the hearings held before the census data became available to identify communities of interest in advance? So some states were working well in advance of redistricting, particularly Section 5 covered states, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Do these sorts of hearings in anticipation of their submission to the Department of Justice. So it's one of the requirements that they have is to hold these sort of public hearings. So they go out and they try to identify their communities of interest in advance of when the census data become available. Many of these states hold these hearings around the state, so they don't just hold the hearing in the state capitol. They try and get out and to different corners of their state so that they can hear input on what citizens think are their communities across their country, their state. That's relatively important. Again, I've been involved in this in a while, and I've noted that people are very familiar with their part of the state, but they're not very familiar with other parts of the state. So particularly a commission state like Arizona, where you only have five commissioners who didn't have a full geographic diversity across the state, it was important for them to get out there and hear what people on the ground thought their communities were. The last point here is that whether or not there were broad public comments accepted. I mean broad in the sense that anyone could make a comment. There are instances that we observed where commissions or committees only accepted comments from people that they approved in advance, and so they were keeping control of who could make public comments, and so it's really, we didn't consider that to be fully participatory if there was some sort of gatekeeping that was going on with the public comments. We also looked at websites, and these are just suggested best practices of websites. Of course, back in the 1990s, we really didn't have the web, so there weren't very many websites back then. But in by 2000, there were 39 states that we identified that had redistricting websites that were dedicated to redistricting, so we're not including in this count legislative committees that might have had their own web pages for redistricting. Mm-hmm. These websites typically had the following information, and there are going to be two screens here. And I would point also, one of the best sites out there currently right now is the Texas Legislative Council website. So it's got a lot of the information that I'm about to show you. You will find on that website. It's one of the best, but there are other good sites out there as well. So they would post meetings, if there were going to be any redistricting meetings, there would be a notification in advance of times, there would be live streaming video or archived video and meeting transcripts. There would be public comments, both those that were allow public comment through the website, so it's a way to solicit that public input, and then they would post the input from the public as well. And they would post all the legal documents because inevitably, and we already have litigation going on in some states, believe it or not, redistricting ends up in court, and so it's important for the public to be able to access those documents to understand what's going on with the legal battles. Also, you will find on these websites often data, and some states make available merged election data to their census data, and I understand that Oregon is not one of those states, but there are other states that do evaluate election data as part of the redistricting process, and they would make these election data merged with the census data available to the public on their websites. And any other data that may be relevant for redistricting, because sometimes, for example, Ohio has rather detailed requirements about political boundaries that are not found within the census geography, so it's important to post that information publicly so that if the public is trying to draw districts that conform to the state constitutional requirements in that state, that they have that information available to them for their own mapping purposes. Sort of mapping that's going on, activities are going on. Especially this decade, we're going to see online mapping tools. There were none last decade, but there's our project, which I will describe to you in a little more detail in a few minutes. But there's also other commercial vendors who are making online mapping products available. And the state of Florida has created their own in-house version of an online mapping tool that they're going to use for public participation. So there are a lot of ability out there now for the public to be engaged through these online mapping tools. And so there's mapping, there's online mapping, but if you're not going to do the online mapping, it is important any plans that you have developed in-house to post those on your website so that the public can evaluate those redistricting plans that are being created, both the sort of draft maps at various stages and the final maps that are produced. And there's a technical term of equivalency files. These are files that every census block has an associated district with it. Those are in a very standard format that all redistricting software can read into their software to be able to visualize the district. So there's a nice format, standard format, that all the software can read in, but that's preferred if the sort of dissemination of maps plans. But if you're not going to do that, images, so you can also, the mapping software now allows people to create PDFs of the districts that you've created. So posting those would also be informative, and also would be informative for the public, the sorts of people who are not going to have access to software to evaluate the district plans that you can create with the equivalency files. And then finally, posting all the plan statistics that you may generate. So population deviations of the districts, the number of splits of political boundaries, if that's one of the criteria that you're going to evaluate, and any other sort of similar criteria that you may evaluate as part of your redistricting process. You will generate some reports here. You can also post those online for the public to see as well. For states that 10 years ago where we did not have online mapping available, there were some states that made public terminals available. So in 1990, actually, there were 14 that made a public terminal available, and 21 in 2000. And these would be dedicated terminals that would have the software and the redistricting data that was being used in that state loaded onto that computer terminal, and it would be available often to the public for them to use. But there were some questions that we had here, which was that we noted some states you had to be sponsored by a legislator in order to use the terminal, so it really wasn't full public access because there was gatekeeping going on as to who could use the terminal. Sometimes those terminals may not have the same data that was being used by the redistricting authority, especially this in states that do evaluate the political consequences of the redistricting plan on that sort of merged election data. And then finally, as I mentioned before, we're expecting online capability. So sort of the public terminal is old school in some way. The new school is going to be online redistricting. But you could still, if you don't want to provide online capabilities, you could have a public terminal available maybe in some state office. Well, you know, if the public's going to be drawing plans, are they able to actually submit those to the legislature for consideration or the redistricting authority? So in 1990, we cataloged 27 states that allowed public submissions or considered them. In 2000, there were 39. What we noticed was if you had a public terminal, usually accepted public submissions. There were just a few outlier states that didn't allow that. And one of the, again, qualifications that we saw here was that some states, in order for a plan that was submitted by the public to be considered as part of the redistricting effort in the state, it had to be submitted by or sponsored by a legislator. So introduced, through the regular legislative process as a bill, that's a higher threshold because there's that's for public participation because there's, again, some sort of gatekeeping that's going on that may prevent the public from being fully engaged in this matter. So overall, we're seeing is there's greater trends towards transparency. And though I didn't mention it because Oregon is not a commission state, many of the new commissions that are being created often have requirements built into the state constitutions for public participation and transparency. And so it's a good point at this point right now to stop and ask if there are any questions.
Any questions, committee members?
Not yet.
You have a lot more to go?
Great, yeah. Well, so what I'm going to show you now is the software that we've developed for redistricting. And you can find more information about this software at the URL that is in front of you at www.publicmapping.org. And there's also a lot of other great information there as well about redistricting. So I'm just going to switch over to the screen here. with the software. And this is software that is being used right now as part of the Virginia redistricting competition. Some of the things that first thing you should note about it is, as I mentioned before, this is being run through a web browser. So what we have here is some software that's sitting on servers, and I am interacting with it through my web browser. So there's no software other than my web browser that is on my computer as I'm using this software. And the reason why we did that is because we didn't want to have to worry about the Mac versus PC versus different Windows operating system issues that arise with trying to install some software on somebody's PC. So this is our method of dissemination for this software. And this particular instance of it has been themed for the redistricting competition in Virginia. But it's a web page like any other web page. So if the state of Oregon, the legislature wanted to use the software, it's rather easy to change the look of this website to have a, what we call a skin such that it is themed to your state. So what you'll see too is that there's a login and there's a way to establish an account if you don't currently have a login. We've disabled that for this particular competition because we are restricting this software to students. The other software that we're making available, and I can discuss the sort of dissemination of how we're doing that, we do enable people just to log in if that's something that whoever's hosting the website wants to do. If you don't have an account, it is possible just to enter as a guest, and you would be able to then view anonymously people's maps, but you wouldn't be able to edit any of them.
Dr. McDonald, this is Senator Bonamici. Can you talk just a little bit about the parameters of this competition? It looks intriguing. Is it college students, law school students, high school students, anybody who's a student can participate in this, or is it just open to the public?
I can give the domain name, too. Can you give the domain name for this site, too?
If you look at the very top here, and there's a link on the public mapping website as well, but it's varedistrictingcompetition.org is the homepage of the competition. And the competition itself, I'm going to back up the page just so you don't get too distracted, it's hosted by Christopher Newport University. And so what we're doing with the public mapping project is just supporting that competition, and that's being run through another entity. And it's college and university students throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. And there are 13 schools that are participating, and there are 15 teams in all. So there are two schools that have two teams. There are some criteria that the redistricting plans, both for congressional, state senate, and state house, are being judged on. And those criteria are equal population, respecting the Voting Rights Act, respecting political boundaries, political fairness that's measured in a way in which the competition is basically a balance of Democrats and Republicans across the state. You want the same balance within the districts themselves as we see statewide. And then lastly, competition. So how many districts where there's a near equal balance of Democrats and Republicans, how many of those districts are you drawing? So that's the competition requirements. Now, as it turns out, after the competition was set up, the Virginia governor, by executive order, created an independent, bipartisan advisory redistricting committee. And that commission is tasked with a different set of criteria than the competition. So we've created a second set of criteria and a second set of prizes. They're actually prizes. The $2,000 prize for the dollar prize for the best state house map, $1,500 for the best state senate map, and $1,000 for the best congressional map, judged by our judges. And the idea here is that we, since there are more districts in the state house plan than in the congressional plan, you'd reward that effort more than accordingly. So, anyways, the return to the issue with the governor's commission is that that commission is looking at the following criteria: equal population, Voting Rights Act, respecting political boundaries, respecting communities of interest, and I should also note that both of them are also have a compactness requirement, so I failed to mention that with the student competition. So, but there's no political considerations that are going on the governor's commission than in the students' competition. So we still want to provide plans for consideration by the governor's commission. So we created a second set of prizes that will be awarded to the plans that best meet the governor's executive order. And so that's generally the competition. This is all, it's not funded by the state, unfortunately. What the executive order established was that some private funders would be able to fund this commission. And there's some politics, of course, involved in all this. So there's a funder of the governor who wanted to create the competition and is one of the driving forces behind raising the money for the competition itself.
Yes, Senator Brzezinski has a question.
Professor, I was looking at the organization and the prizes. I see that for the House of Delegations, the first place prize is $2,000 as compared to the Senate, it's only $1,500. What happened there?
More House members. Well, as I mentioned, there, the idea was to award having to draw more districts. So it's just proportionate to the amount of work that was going to have to be done. To draw more districts.
We're just looking across at the representatives over here from the Senate side and wondering how they got more money than we got.
Well, that was it.
I think you're welcome to go ahead.
Okay. Going back to the software itself, once I log in, what we're trying to do with this software is make it as easy as possible for somebody who's unfamiliar with redistricting to draw districts. And so, unlike some of the commercial software that's out there, we don't allow the user to do much on their own in terms of configuring the software. All of that is preset, well, not all of it, but most of it's preset by the people who are administering the website. So what we've got here at the very outset is that you can select the different legislative body that you wish to draw redistricting plans for. And we've preset and preloaded data for these different legislative districts so that, again, that the user doesn't have to do a lot of their own setup here. And so if I was going to draw a congressional map, I would select the congressional map. Then there are two options. There are four options here of the sort of plans that I can be drawing. But what we first offer people are two options for drawing, starting with a map. They can either start with a blank map with no geography within the state assigned to any district, or they can start with the current congressional plan in Virginia. And so those are your options there. There's also a way to, although we haven't had anybody do this yet, in fact, I know there's one over here, so I'll show you this, the State Senate map. So what people can do is once they've created a map that they like, they can share it with everybody else. And so I could also start from a map that has been created by another user. And I can look at the plans that I've created. So unfortunately for that. Sorry about that. So then there's also the ability to upload a plan from other software. So if there's a block equivalency file that's been created for another plan that's publicly available, I can upload that plan into the software using this upload feature. So I'm going to start with a plan that I've already created, and I've started drawing it. And it's close to the current congressional district. I've actually done a little bit of editing on it already. And what you see here is the districts in congressional districts in Virginia. What we're showing the districts by, they're colored different colors, and you can see these colors also over here on the right-hand side with the statistics. These colors are telling us, if you're a little bit observant here, the target population, which is taking the total population of Virginia and dividing it through by 11, which is the number of congressional districts in the state, is 727,000. And so this coloring scheme, the blue colored districts, are districts that are underpopulated, and the ones that are gold colored are districts that are overpopulated. And those that are got kind of a white tinge to them, or have no coloring, they have they are close to being near the ideal. We can set the tolerance level here. What we've done here is if it's plus or minus 0.5% of the target population, then that district is not coded. The idea is that we're trying to give people who are unfamiliar with redistricting some visual cues that their districts are still not legal, and they're going to have to do some additional work here balancing the populations in order to create some legal districts. Now, in Virginia, we do have voting rights concerns because we are a Section 5 covered jurisdiction. And so we're also trying to provide some clues to people who are drawing districts that they have to adhere to some voting rights requirements. So what we do is we show the number of districts that have black voting age population majority districts in your plan and in the plan that was in use in the 2000 decade. And in a Section 5 covered jurisdiction, generally, you have to have the number of districts not decrease when you do a redistricting, or else there's something that's called retrogression that's in effect. Now, of course, Oregon is not a Section 5 covered jurisdiction, but still, I think as a general rule, usually you've got voting majority VAP, either Hispanic or African-American districts, that were created maybe out of litigation, and so you probably, if you have one already, you probably want to draw another one at the moment in your current plan. And then another way in which we're trying to show people whether or not they've drawn a legal plan is we've got a checkbox here as to whether or not the plan is contiguous. And there's actually some unfortunateness here because there are some labels here that are being hidden by these statistics. But this column here with checkboxes is to show whether or not the plan is contiguous. And this column here is a compactness measure, and that one, I believe, is the Schwarzburg measure, if you are an aficionado of different compactness measures. We're going to have the ability soon, within about 2 weeks of having more additional statistics, including additional compactness measures, and there is a way to actually get more compactness measures generated by our program. But right now we only have 6 slots available for statistics. What we also have on this demographics tab for each district is the percent Democrat of the 2009 gubernatorial election as a percent of the Democrat plus Republican candidates. So it's a measure of political fairness and competition. And although it's hidden, this is the column for the within each district, the percent black voting age population, and this is for each district, the percent Hispanic voting age population. So those are the statistics that we have available right now. And as I said, this is software that's under active development, and soon we're going to have many more statistics that are going to be able to be available. We can also shade the counties by some of these statistics that you're seeing on the right-hand column. Right now, if you know Virginia at all, the northern part of the state is where is the most densely populated part here outside of D.C. And what we're doing is we're color-coding the counties right now based on their population. And you can actually pull up this map legend. You can see what the different values that we have already, what we're shading the different counties and independent cities in Virginia by. But it's possible to also show, for example, if you're trying to draw a voting rights district, and you would want to pay attention to the black voting age population as you're drawing your district. And so here's a way of displaying that information as well. And so that's most of the important tools here. We only have a limited amount of time, and I want to be able to answer questions, so I won't go into all the features that we have. But let me just show you how to draw some maps. And so the simplest way for us to draw a map is to select one of our map selection tools, and we have a way of dragging and dropping. So what happens here is, well, let's see, I know District 7 is overpopulated, so I need to get District 5 up, so I just click on it, and now I've selected this county. I can grab it, and I can drop it, and I can drop it over here in District 5. And the statistics will update. Hey, I've now got District 5 within population tolerance, but, you know, if I was actually doing redistricting, I'd probably want to go all the way down to zero population to get a safe harbor from litigation. But here we go. So I've made a good change, and that's now been displayed on the map. There are other ways of selecting more geography if you wish to do so by various measures, and we also have an alternative way instead of selecting every time doing the sort of drop and drag, I can automatically, any district that I select right now in District 7 would be assigned to District 7, and I can go through and start assigning that geography. So we've got different assignment tools. We have different ways of showing more information about the districts, and we also have a way of locking a district once you're satisfied that that's a good district for you. I can click on it, and it highlights it in red, and now I can't make any changes to that district.
Dr. McDonald, as Representative Lindsay, can you actually redraw lines in this web-based application, or is it just block and tackle type stuff?
No, I'm actually live when I changed that county and moved it over from one district to another. That was a live update. The district boundary lines changed, and the statistics over here changed as well. And I will do our undo to show you that actually happened. So that was District 5, and now District 5's population has changed. And so we're doing live updates. But I think maybe what you mean is, most redistricting happens at the census block level. It doesn't happen at the county level. And so if I click on this hand tool here, and I can zoom in all the way, when I zoom in, at this point what we're doing for Virginia, though this is configurable in software, is I'm showing we're showing voting tabulation districts or precincts. And if I wanted to zoom in even further, now I'm seeing census blocks, and I could start moving these census blocks around much like I was just showing you. Census district's locked, I'll do that, and then I can take any block and just move it in and draw districts at the block level. And that's important because really redistricting happens at the block level. It doesn't happen at the county level. It's, you know, so as you zoom in, more selection layers become available to you to do your redistricting. But if I zoom back out all the way, then I would see that I can only move counties around at this point. So what we've done is we've tied the where that you can actually do the editing on to your Zoom level. And we do that because if we were going to try and display all the census blocks in a particular state in one screen like this at a state level view, that's a lot of data to transfer over to the program through a web browser. So we made a decision not to display that information. So you can't do a block level redistricting when you're zoomed out all the way. You have to zoom down into the application.
And just one more question. So someone finishes this file and they save it out as a .bef file? Is that what you called it?
Oh, yeah. It would be a block equivalency file. And so that's a good question. So once I'm satisfied that the redistricting plan is good, I can one, share it with other people. So I could say it's... I can share it, and once I share it, everybody else in the world can see the plan that I've created. And we've got a way also to, and we're actually hoping to have more of this, but a way for people if they're blogging on it or something like that to be able to give a URL so that they could point people to the map they've created. We hope to have, though we're not funded for this at the moment, but we're seeking funding to do this, be able to embed maps and do all sorts of other cool things with social networking. And then if I wanted to actually export the file, I can create one of these block equivalency files. It takes a little while to do, so I'm not going to do it because I'm going to have to wait a few minutes. But if you request the file, then you will get one of these block equivalency files that can be read into any other redistricting software that's out there.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Let me just... there's one other thing I want to show you here, which is we do have additional ways of evaluating the redistricting plans. So what we're doing when you're, I'll just go back very quickly here. When I made a change here on the from one, like adding this county here and moving it over, all of these statistics were updated live. And so District 5's population changes, the district boundaries change, and that's all good, and that's what we want to have happen so that people get immediate feedback on how they're progressing as they're doing their mapping. But as it turns out, there are some things that are very difficult, or at least we believe are very difficult to calculate in real time. And so what we've done is we've got an additional way of producing reports. And they can, of course, produce all the reports that we just saw, there's some additional reports on compactness and some looking for unassigned blocks and looking for split geographies, et cetera, that especially split geographies take a while to calculate, and it's difficult to do that in real time as you're doing the redistricting. What we have here is an additional tool that allows people to generate reports. Again, these reports take a few minutes to run, so I'm not going to run one now because then we get bogged down in seeing a report run. But that's pretty much the status of the software is at the moment. As I said, we are going to deploy more additional features to the software. One of them is this additional statistics that are viewable and the ability for a user to actually customize which statistics they want to see. We're also going to have a way of doing community mapping, and it's going to be very similar to this community mapping that we have right now, which is I could draw a single district with a blank map, and I've drawn my community here. It's very small. So hopefully we'll zoom into it and pan across it. All right, so that district one would be my community, because that's the neighborhood in which I live in. So we're going to add some additional capabilities here, because you really don't need all these statistics, and you really shouldn't be seeing this unassigned geography, and you don't really need to know if your district's underpopulated when you're drawing community. But you may still wish to see some of the statistics that are associated with your community as well, to see what its voting age, not only voting age population, but we have other demographic characteristics like total population by race and ethnicity that we can display as well here. And data is data, so feasibly it's possible to merge in any of the American Community Survey data and display that information as well, and that would have information about income and citizenship and other things that may be of use for people as they're thinking about how to define communities of interest. So we're going to have a community mapping tool by the beginning of March. And one other thing that we're going to do to help support these competitions is we're going to have leaderboards where people can see how their plans stack up against other people's plans. So is their redistricting plan the most compact plan? Is it the one that's got the least population deviation, et cetera? And so we want to have that in place to help the students know where their plan stands with other people's plans. And I think, that's pretty much it. So if there are any questions...
I have one, and that is, has there been a full completion of a competition?
We started the competition yesterday.
Oh, okay. But there's no previous other states that have done this. You're leading out on this.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got our census data just last week, so this is all now in real time.
Great. Representative Carey?
Thank you. Professor, what's Virginia's deadline for completing its redistricting process?
Yeah, we are, it's scary what our deadline is. I don't have a firm deadline yet because of what, there's some legislative action that still needs to take place. But our primaries are generally held in June. And you have to back up then from candidate filing deadlines. And then you have to back up to the 60-day window for submission to the Department of Justice for Section 5 clearance. So if we were really looking at a June primary, we would have to have redistricting done in March. The legislature is likely to pass a bill that will shift the primaries just for this year to August, which will give us a little bit of breathing room on the DOJ submission.
We have a deadline of July 1 of this year, which makes it a little daunting to think about setting up something like this that we could do in time for our own purposes, but it's a very interesting demonstration.
Well, we stood up this software for Virginia in a week. So, we've automated a lot of what you're seeing here in terms of setting up the software. So, I think, if your technical staff wanted to do this, we would be happy to work with them, and I bet you they could do it within a couple of days.
Okay. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. And Dr. McDonald, will you remind us, is Virginia one of the states that does redistricting by commission? Is that the governor's commission? Or do they have legislative input as well?
Well, yes. So it's the regular legislative process. What the commission, the governor did by executive order was establish an advisory commission, and that commission is tasked with forwarding some maps to the state legislature for their consideration during the redistricting process that's going to start very soon.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Dr. McDonald. We sincerely appreciate it, and enjoy the East Coast.
I will do that.
Thank you.
You enjoy the West Coast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I got that. Okay, well, next on our agenda is we have Janice Thompson from Common Cause. And is Kathy, you can come in as well, or just are we doing this separately? Okay. thank you for being here today.
Janice Thompson with Common Cause Oregon. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. Common Cause has been around for 40 years and has had a long time interest in redistricting, and has been a key player, for example, in the passage down in California of ballot measures that are having that state have its first trial run and having an independent commission. But regardless of who draws the lines, Common Cause affiliates across the country have always advocated for clear criteria and a transparent process. And what's really great is that much of what my counterparts in other states are pushing are actually already occurring in Oregon. I think it's fair to say that Oregon's criteria are clear and are frequently recommended to other states as an example of a good set of criteria. There's also a tradition of hearings, including road trips. So, you know, in the survey results from Professor McDonald, you know, Oregon, I think, was definitely in those lists of states that do hearings. And I would characterize the level of hearings that have traditionally occurred in Oregon as being kind of at the higher end. I mean, sometimes there's hearings in states, but they're pretty perfunctory. Obviously, transparency is an important principle. One item that I thought Professor McDonald was going to mention, having seen him in action a couple of different workshops in the last year or so, was something that I will send a link to staff about, that the Brookings Institute kind of put together their principles for transparency and public participation. So I think he touched on a lot of it, but it's a specific document that I thought he was going to mention that he did not. So I mentioned having, you know, seen Professor McDonald in action several times. We have been in coordination with him, have been aware of the public mapping project, and trying to build towards some cooperative effort with him. In general, the exact scope of that has been kind of in process of getting figured out, because we're still nailing down exactly the level of grant support and the budget. That actually just got figured out this week. I know you can all relate to having a budget and, you know, needing to have a program fit that scope. So that's all getting sorted out, but definitely we'll be doing kind of an education campaign. Kind of a tagline we're tentatively using is something along the lines of redistricting probably being the most important political process of the decade that most people know too little about. It's one of those things that, you know, is really, really important, and the level of public awareness and understanding of it is minimal. Also, some education efforts as part of this project to the general public, but also to the press, and trying to work with, you know, all those vehicles to get people really thinking about their communities of interest and participating in the hearings. You know, where the rubber really meets the road with regards to redistricting is how communities of interest are defined, and, you know, really people in their own neighborhoods and, you know, school districts and whatnot are the true experts there. In terms of public participation and outreach, it does seem particularly important to, and I'm going to be doing some work on this, but in general, outreach to communities of color. One of the things, you know, you've had previous discussions, I was listening from afar and last week, for example, and am really familiar with and talked several times with Justin Lovett. But it is important to recognize that, you know, there's obviously lots of legal considerations related to redistricting and race, but it is definitely legal to draw kind of minority opportunity districts, which is probably what most of the dynamics, the population demographics in Oregon would play out. And this goal is, I think, worth supporting because the legislature does not reflect the diversity of the state. I mean, I'm going to be intrigued to hear, I mean, it sounds like part of the discussion with Professor McDonald is, you know, what options the official process might have for using his public mapping. And I'm definitely not interested in, like, you know, reinventing wheels. So, but I think I think we're definitely exploring some sort of competition potentially using the public mapping. I think it would take much more of an emphasis on drawing communities of interest, because that's what people are really expert in, kind of for their area, rather than drawing like an entire map. But in general, just want to let you know that you know, we're going to be trying to, you know, help get the word out about the importance of this process. And I think it's really great that we're in a situation where that's occurring, along with, I think, a really good track record of activity here. And so I know that you're in the midst of figuring out, you know, your, you know, road trips and things like that. And so I'll just, you know, eagerly await that information, because I want to kind of dovetail with that as much as possible. As well as, you know, I would appreciate hearing what you might do in terms of interacting with the public mapping project, so that, you know, again, I'm not doing something that you guys are doing. So just want to commend the work that has been going on to kind of lay the groundwork for this really fast process. I definitely am aware of the timeline elements, and that definitely influences, you know, the scope of what I'm going to be able to do, and just, you know, would look forward to, you know, any opportunities to be of assistance, and, you know, as I develop work that's potentially parallel, that it is parallel in a kind of mutually beneficial manner.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. I think Representative Garrett has a question.
I do, but I think we can wait for Cappy to... Okay. I mean, we might have questions for both.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank members of the committee. You have a job before you. For the record, my name is Kathy Eden. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. For those of you who are not necessarily familiar with the League, we are a nonpartisan grassroots political organization, and our particular emphasis is on citizen participation, informed citizen participation in government. The importance of equal representation in a democratic republic can't be overemphasized. It is critical to our form of government that there is adherence to the principle of one person, one vote, as closely as possible, and Oregon has an excellent record of adhering to that, with a very narrow percentage of deviation from one district to another. Over the 90 years of the League's existence, we have staunchly supported citizen participation and endeavored to both encourage it and to provide opportunities for voter education and involvement. We offer voter registration in a number of venues, including high schools, college campuses, citizen naturalization ceremonies, community events such as the Eugene Celebration, and other civic and county events. The voter service arm of the League offers speakers on ballot measure issues, moderates public forums for candidates and elected officials, and researches, writes, and publishes voters' guides in the state and local levels. Most local leagues are involved with their communities in development and economic issues. Because of the importance of the redistricting process in ensuring equal representation, the League encourages both its members and Oregon citizens to attend the redistricting meetings that are held around the state as part of the plans are being discussed. We monitor the activities of the legislature, and you will see us here, of the legislature as it works through the data. Locally, we discuss redistricting criteria with city councils and county commissioners to ensure equity and protection of communities of interest. Historically, 1991, I was part of a 12-person citizen commission, which then Secretary of State Phil Kiesling put together. And it was our responsibility to go around and look into the data and closely look at the neighborhoods, particularly for communities of interest. And I remember standing at Laurel Hill in Eugene. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Eugene, but Laurel Hill is up here, and there's a golf course down here. And it's a particularly difficult community of interest. And so they were looking at exactly what they had to do at the neighborhood level to ensure the representation. It was a very interesting experience. And then in 2001, Secretary of State Bradbury had 22 public hearings around the state. And that was, in 1991, was the first time, actually, that they had some technology for mapping. And that was a very interesting and educational piece. And then 10 years later, there was much more technology available. And Secretary Bradbury did go around to 22 communities, and they changed the maps after each of those meetings around the state. They looked at the comments they got, and down to the neighborhood level and the communities of interest after each of those 22 hearings. And we had league members at most of those hearings, and encouraged them to talk with the people who were there, the staff members, as to what their concerns were about redistricting. The league studied Oregon's redistricting in 2008, came up with a publication on Oregon's redistricting. If you don't have a copy and would like one, I'll be happy to see that you get one. We go into both what happens in Oregon and how we looked around the country at how redistricting is done many of the states and assemble that information. And so I think you got this information passed out to you, and there is a website you could go to see about this report. And along with that, our members discussed what was in the report and came up with a consensus for a position on redistricting. You also have copies of that position. So I won't go into it, but you can certainly ask questions about it. We very much appreciate this opportunity to comment about this important issue, and we look forward to working with you and assisting in whatever way we can to make sure that the public is informed and there's plenty of transparency around the development of the plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Garrett?
Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you both throughout this process. And again, we talk about communities of interest because that's a term that a lot of people scratch their heads about. And so since you both have been involved with this for some time, we're going to benefit a lot from your thoughts on that. But I had a specific question, Janice, going back to what you were saying about minority populations. This is potentially a difficult issue for us this year because we have significant growth in especially Latino population in the state, and we have to be cognizant of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, and yet we don't have election data as part of our official census data that we get. We don't report precinct data to the federal government because of our statutory framework. How do we go about determining what should our process be for gathering the information that we need in order to make a decision about whether we need to create an opportunity district?
Representative Garrett, chairs, I actually don't have the answer to that, but I totally recognize it as a key question, and so it's something I'm really actively thinking about. It's part of the conversation I'm having with Professor McDonald in terms of, you know, doing some sort of use of his program for public input, generating public input. And it actually presents, the notion of having, kind of outside of your official process, some parallel public processes is one that, can make some people nervous, and I don't think you should be nervous. But actually, I think in this area, I think there's a possibility for something parallel that has some of the political data to help shed light on that question and raise. I actually have a question. I mean, I think Oregon's criteria about related to not factoring in the various political advantage dynamics are good criteria. I wonder if you are not hamstrung by meeting that criteria by not having the political data. I mean, which may seem kind of counterintuitive. I mean, it's like, if you're not supposed to be factoring that, right now the paradigm is you don't have the data. And that's your legal reality.
You're suggesting we need to have it so we can use it for the right reasons.
Right,
The bad reasons.
But that's not the legal environment that you're in right now.
I know.
So that's one element of like this potential parallel process that has the political data that could help like shine the light on like it's not the end of the world if the official process had that data. And so, so in other words, I don't have an answer to that question, but
I think it's going to be key in our
right.
in our hearings as we take in testimony from those communities that at least they have had access to political data. I mean, we're going to need to hear
right. And that's why
this.
And so, if I may, I mean, some of the outreach I'm doing are particularly to those communities, so that and trying to get them that data potentially, using the resources, the open source resources that Professor McDonald's talking about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. To both Janice and Seppi, thank you so much for your testimony. I wanted to ask you about, you are basically membership organizations, what type of outreach, as we put the final touches on our road hearing schedule, what will you be doing? I assume you have email newsletters and mailings and that sort of thing. What type of efforts will you be engaging in to let people across the state know?
Senator Montemici, co-chairs, we certainly will be using both the web, both our websites, and right now we send a weekly legislative report to our members and to anyone else who may want to subscribe to it, and that will be a continuing effort to keep people updated about what's going on with redistricting. And certainly, as you hold meetings around the state, which I hope you're planning to do, we will have people there, and every one of our local leagues also has a website and a newsletter, and that will also contain information. And I would suspect that we may hold our own public hearings for people to come and comment about that. So we'll, at the least level, we'll be doing that.
Senator Bonamici, co-chairs, similar situation, use of email alerts, mailings. I have another project going on that's going to involve a team of volunteers doing some phone calling, and so I think I could potentially dovetail mentioning hearings, in targeted, for on these other phone calls. So definitely just trying to get the word out within our membership as well.
Thank you. And follow-up comment? We will be traveling around the state. We're working on putting our schedule together. It should be available soon, and we welcome input on the best ways to get that information out to the community. We're exploring social networking, and of course we'll be doing traditional sort of press releases, and all members will be able to put the information in their newsletters and that kind of thing. But any input from your organizations or anyone else who's listening on the best ways to engage the public would be most welcome.
Cappy, you said back in 1991 that at each hearing, sometimes you change the map.
That was in 2001. We didn't have that capability in 1991, so we had this small group of us that went around and looked to help with. We had one geographer and one piece of technology in the Capitol that people could look at. But nothing like you have now.
Well, I guess my question is it good to have a proposed map prior to that local meeting?
Yes.
Or is it better to go listen first and then come draw the map?
Well, I think Representative Lindsay, I believe that you are going to have a lot of public participation because there are commercial, as Dr. McDonald said, there are groups that are putting maps out that you can use, and there are a lot of volunteer people who are going to want to look at their own particular district and offer maps to you if you are willing to have them submitted to you. So I think that's going to occur, and it was in 2001. They actually did change the staff that went along with the secretary, looked at the maps after they'd had the hearings and made adjustments.
Right. Representative Garrett,
just an observation that we're looking at starting hearings in the latter part of March, and we don't know exactly when we're going to get our census data, but we don't expect it, before early March. So I don't have any expectation we're going to have a draft map by the time we start taking testimony, but I think what we will know is we can go out to a district and say, we now know what the new census data shows, but we know if you're going to have to shrink or grow, mm-hmm. and in which direction.
Exactly.
And I think that will give us enough of a predicate to be able to get some pretty good public feedback on that.
Right. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Janice, thank you for your testimony. You mentioned that Oregon has clear criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some examples of that clear criteria that you're referring to?
Representative Cameron, co-chairs, certainly. I mean, they're spelled out in the ORS 188.010, the contiguous equal population. I think a lot of the things that you've heard in other presentations. It's by comparison. I mean, those criteria may not seem all that extensive, but there are states where it's really just kind of a black hole, except for the federal legal overlays. So they are spelled out in ORS 188. And so to summarize them, be contiguous, equal population, utilize existing geographic political boundaries, not divide communities of interest, be connected by transportation links, no district shall be drawn for the purpose of favoring any political party, incumbent, legislator, or other person, nor drawn for the purpose of diluting the voting strength of any language or ethnic minority, and the nesting of two House districts in the Senate districts. And like I say, that may seem like you've heard that so many times now, it may just seem like, but there are just, my point is just that there are states that are not nearly that detailed. And so it's, again, what's really tricky is the definition of communities of interest. Oregon takes the approach of not being very prescriptive about that, and there are some states that try to really define that, and I haven't figured out in my mind what I think is the best approach there. if it's more open-ended, you can use hearings and get the input, especially since it's a dynamic I mean, how that's defined, I think, is dynamic. It's not, you know, it's going to change over time. And my, you know, since I have conversations, I've had conversations with people in other states that try to define it, you know, down the line, oh, this part of the definition is causing us problems. So it's, I think, which approach to go there is actually another tricky topic.
Follow up for me. There was one criteria you mentioned. It's the geographic and what was the other? Geographic and political
boundaries.
Boundaries. Can you talk a little bit about what that means to you, or what that definition means or criteria means?
The political boundaries, I think, are clear. I mean, it can be counties, cities, school districts. In both 1991 and 2001, when this did default to the respective Secretary of States, there were some added guidelines to kind of what that meant. And then, you know, geography, I think, is just taking a look at, natural features. And, you know, on the map, some communities, you know, some areas might seem like, oh, why aren't they together? But, you know, when you overlay Google Earth on the, which you can do, Professor McDonald didn't, you know, demonstrate that, but my understanding is that with his system, you can kind of overlay Google Earth so you see all the geographic features, and you can kind of see some areas like, oh, that's really logical, but, you know, there's a mountain in the middle there, and there's that reason for not to have two districts together.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, I like short meetings, so with that said, we'll close this informational meeting. Oh, go ahead.
If I may, I meant to mention this early, but one kind of fun little historical note. Tomorrow is the 199th anniversary of the date that Governor Eldridge Gary in Massachusetts signed the bill that included the famous district that
the Salamander.
So evidently that was signed on February 12th, 1812. So I think as of tomorrow that'll be. So just a little fun historical fact.
Now we're going to have a wild weekend.
Yeah.
Kathy?
I have a couple more comments. Janice mentioned the criteria that's in ORS 188.010, I think Representative Cameron, you'd find some pretty specifics in that reference as to what is expected of the legislature with the criteria, and then Phil Kiesling developed some principles for redistricting, which Senator Bradbury also incorporated. That's in this redistricting book I have on page 24, if you want to take a look at that. Because there are some principles that deal particularly with the geographic boundaries, a river dividing a city. But one of the things that came out of those, both 91 and 2001, was you do not separate a city if you possibly don't have to between two districts. Those kinds of things. And if the population has shifted north of a river or some other national, some geographic kind of thing, you try to still remain contiguous but deal with that particular geographic piece.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody. That said, we'll close the informational meeting and adjourn the House Redistricting Committee.
And I'll adjourn the Senate Committee on Redistricting. Thank you.
Thank you.